Thanks for being with us this hour. I'm Todd Zwillick, and we turn now to Afghanistan, where hundreds of civilians were caught in a deadly terror attack over the weekend. On Saturday, Taliban suicide bombers drove an ambulance past a security checkpoint in Kabul and then detonated their explosives. Afghan officials say at least 103 people died in that attack, and roughly 235 more were wounded. Then earlier today, a group of Islamic State militants killed 11 Afghan soldiers and injured 16 in an attack outside of a military academy in Kabul. These attacks are just the latest in a string of violent bombings carried out over the past year in Afghanistan. Joining me now is Barnett Rubin, director of the Afghanistan-Pakistan Regional Program at NYU Center on International Cooperation. He's also a former advisor to both the U.S. State Department and the United Nations. Barnett, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
What do these latest bombings say about the state of Afghanistan now?
I think they say that the Taliban and their sponsors in Pakistan have found a way to reply very forcefully to the new U.S. strategy. In particular, a Taliban spokesman has told a journalist that because of the increased use of air power, they're unable to move around as much in the countryside and may be losing control of territory. But rather than accepting that they're being defeated, of course, they have responded by increasing very spectacular acts of terror in the urban areas, and particularly in the heart of Kabul, the capital, which undermines people's confidence in the government, whatever there was left of it. And that's a government that is going through a very severe political crisis right now in any case.
Now, you're drawing a direct line, Barnett, from U.S. policies in Pakistan and Afghanistan under the Trump administration to this new violence. What is the U.S. doing differently? Refresh us, please.
The U.S. is in the process of sending about 1,000 more troops to Afghanistan and has said that there's no timeline for withdrawing them, and has also greatly relaxed the rules on the use of air power. This is what the Taliban spokesman mentioned, so that the U.S. is now using a lot more bombing raids in support of military operations on the ground. It's acting even independently of the Afghan forces, which is limiting the Taliban's operations in the countryside. The U.S. claims that this will eventually gain control of more territory and population and force the Taliban to negotiate. I think these series of bombings say that we have ways of responding that actually may be even more threatening to you and the Afghan government than taking territory in remote areas of the country. We can hit you right at the center and undermine people's confidence in the government and its unity.
Now, that's in Afghanistan, Barnett Rubin. What about in Pakistan? President Trump has decided to pull back on aid to Pakistan. Is there a connection between that decision and what might be going on across the border?
I don't know for certain. The Afghan authorities have indicated that, as usual, they have evidence tying these attackers to people in Pakistan, that is to say, not necessarily people in the Pakistan government, but Afghan Taliban who are in safe havens in Pakistan. And everyone in Afghanistan, at least, certainly everyone in Kabul, believes firmly that these attacks are masterminded by Pakistan. So it could be. I'm not saying it's true because I don't have the evidence yet. But it is certainly widely believed in Afghanistan that this is an attempt by the very secretive part of the Pakistan intelligence agency that supports the Afghan Taliban to show the Americans that their attempt to put pressure on Pakistan will fail and that they have to come to the table on Pakistan's terms and accept something that thus far the U.S. hasn't been willing to accept.
At the same time, there's a power struggle between the president of Afghanistan, Ashraf Ghani, and a provincial leader in that country. How is that contributing?
That is more than just a struggle between two individuals. It actually is a struggle over two very important political forces in the country over how the state is to be structured. Should it be controlled by the center, or should provinces and localities and ethnic groups in the regions have more autonomous power? Because this governor claims that he has a mandate from his own people, even though constitutionally he is merely appointed by the president, who is trying to remove him. That has already created some tensions within the security forces to the point that the president had to publicly warn the security forces not to be involved in politics. And Vice President Pence also called up to tell them to resolve this peacefully. And each side will use this as leverage against the other. So it's a very dangerous situation. According to a report in the Wall Street Journal this morning, people in Kabul, even though the government is blaming Pakistan and the Taliban for the attacks, the people in Kabul are largely blaming the government for not preventing them because its security systems failed very obviously and starkly in two or three major cases just within the past week.
Is there any reason to believe that this latest violence, even if it is in response to American air power in Afghanistan and maybe even policy in Pakistan, might be the necessary pain that you go through before the policy works and the Taliban is significantly weakened?
Afghanistan has gone through so much pain in the last 40 years. It's not necessary. I don't think that the military escalation is going to solve any problems or improve the situation. The United States government, when I was working there and even now, always says that it wants to wait for peace talks until it's in a stronger position. Therefore, it's escalating. But I think this is more evidence the escalation won't work. On the other hand, the government in Kabul and the people in Kabul and in Afghanistan generally are certainly in no mood to sit down and talk with the Taliban after these horrendous acts that they have carried out in the past few weeks. So I don't see any upside whatsoever in what has happened.
And this may seem like a naive question given what you just said, but is there any conceivable path toward a political settlement right now that will at least reduce the violence and get Afghanistan or Kabul on a different path here?
The only conceivable path would be one in which Pakistan would take some strong measures to curb the ability of the Taliban to carry out terrorist acts inside Afghanistan, which could help pave the way toward negotiations. But the fact is that anything like that is going to take a very long time. The feelings are now so high and bitter and angry that I don't even know if a meeting would be productive.
Barnett Rubin, director of the Afghanistan-Pakistan Regional Program at NYU Center on International Cooperation. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.